And why this flesh happens? Because mind is not there. The basic thing is, if the mind is not there and you are alert, you will have satori. You will have the first glimpse of samadhi. Thought is the barrier. So in any way, if thought disappears, the thing will happen. But the thought must disappear only when alertness is there. Because thought can disappear even in sleep. Thought can disappear when you go unconscious. Thought can disappear when you take some drug. But then, thought disappears, but there is no alertness to be aware of the phenomena that is hidden behind thought. So I define meditation as thoughtless consciousness. You can become thoughtless and unconscious, then there is no meaning. You can be conscious with thought, you are already that. Bring these two things together, consciousness and thoughtlessness. When they meet, meditation happens. Meditation is born. And with very small things you can try. Because nothing is small. Even a sneeze is a cosmic phenomenon. In existence, nothing is great and nothing is small. Even a minute atom can destroy the whole world. And even a sneeze, a very atomic phenomena, can transform you. So don't see things as small, big. There is nothing small and nothing big. If you have the penetrating eye, then very small things are vital. And between atoms, universes are hidden. And between universe and atom, you cannot say which is great and which is small. Even a single atom is a universe in itself. And the greatest universe is nothing but atoms. So don't think in terms. Just try. Don't say, what can happen in a sneeze? I have been sneezing the whole life and nothing has happened. Bring this technique. Just at the start of sneezing, during fright, when you feel afraid and the fear enters, just when you feel the fear has entered, become aware and fear will disappear. With alertness there can be no fear. How can be afraid when you are alert? You can be afraid only when you lose alertness. So really, a coward is not a person who is afraid. A coward is a person who is asleep. And a brave man is a person who can bring his alertness to the moments of fear. So fear disappears. In Japan, they train their warriors for alertness. The basic training is for alertness. And everything is secondary. Swordmanship, archery, everything is secondary. It is known, it is said, about a great Zen master, Rinchai. That he never succeeded in his archery to get to the right point, to the right aim. his arrow always missed. It never reached to the right point. And he is known as one of the greatest archers. So it is asked, how Rinjai is known as the greatest archer? When he never succeeded in any aim, and the point was always missed, his arrow never reached to the right point, how he is known as one of the greatest archers? So the followers of Rinjai say, it is not the end, it is the beginning. We are not concerned with the arrow reaching to the end, we are concerned with the arrow when it starts its journey. We are concerned with Rinjai, when the arrow leaves the bow, he is alert, that's all. It is not that is irrelevant. And sometimes it happens, one man was a disciple to Rinjai. He was a great archer himself. He never missed his aim. And then he came to learn to Rinjai. So somebody said, to whom you are going to learn? He is not a master. He is not even a disciple. He is a failure. And you are a great master. And you are going to learn to Rinjai. So that archer said, yes, because I have succeeded technically, but as far as my consciousness is concerned, I am a failure. He is technically a failure, but as far as his consciousness is concerned, he is the archer and the master, because when the arrow leaps, he is alert. And that's the point. This archer, who was a master technically, had to learn for years under Rinjai. And every day, 100% he was accurate in his aiming. And Rinjai will say, no, you are a failure. The arrow leaves technically right, but you are not there, you are not alert. You leave it in your sleep. In Japan, they have been training their warriors first to be alert, then everything is secondary. A warrior will be a brave man if he can be alert. And it was felt in the Second World War that you cannot match Japanese warriors. Their bravery is incomparable. From where it comes, physically, they are not so strong. But in consciousness, in alertness, fear cannot enter. They are not afraid. And whenever fear comes, they will try Zen methods. This sutra says, during fright, in anxiety, when you feel anxious, much anxiety ridden, try it. What one is to do, what you do ordinarily, when anxiety is there, what you do? You try to solve it. You try alternatives and you get more and more into it. You will create a bigger mess, because anxiety cannot be solved through thinking. It cannot be dissolved through thinking, because thinking itself is a sort of anxiety. So you help it to grow more. Through thinking, you cannot come out of it. You will go deeper into it. This technique says, don't do anything with anxiety, just be alert. Just be alert. I will tell you one anecdote about Bokuchu, another Zen master. He lived alone in a cave, all alone. But during the day or even in the night, he will sometimes loudly say Bokoju, his own name, and then he will say, yes, I am here. And there was no one else. So his disciples used to ask him, why you call Bokoju your own name and then you say, yes sir, I am here. He said, whenever I get into thinking, I have to remember, be alert, so I call my name Bokoju. The moment I call Bokoju and I say, yes sir, I am here, the thinking, the anxiety disappears. Then in his last days, for 2 or 3 years, he never called his name Bokoju and never had to reply, yes sir, I am here. So his disciples asked, Master, now you never do that. So he said, but now Bokoju is always there. He is always there and there is no need. Before, I used to miss him. Sometimes the anxiety will take me, cloud me all over. And Bokoju was not there, then I had to remember Bokoju and the anxiety will disappear. Try this. This is a beautiful thing. Try your name. When you feel deep anxiety, just try your name Bokoju. Any name, but your name. And then reply it, yes sir, I am here. And feel the difference. The anxiety will not be there. At least for a single moment, you will have a glimpse beyond the clouds. And that glimpse can be deepened. Once you know that if you become alert, anxiety is not there, it disappears. You have come to a deep knowing of your own self and the mechanism of inner workings. Above a chasm, flying in battle, in extreme curiosity, at the beginning of hunger, at the end of hunger, be uninterruptedly aware. You can use anything. Hunger is there, become alert. What you do when you feel hunger is there? What has happened? When you feel hunger, you never see it as something happening to you. You become hunger. You feel, I am hungry. And the real feeling is, I am hunger. But you are not hunger. You are conscious of it. It is something on the boundary happening. You are the center who has become aware of it. It is an object. You remain the subject. You are a witness. You are not hunger. Hunger is happening to you. You were there when hunger was not. And you will be there when hunger will have gone. So hunger is an accident. It happens to you. Become alert. Then you will not be identified with it. If you feel hunger, become alert that hunger is there. Look at it. Encounter it. Face it. What will happen? The more you become alert, the far away hunger will be felt. Less alert, nearer. If you are not alert, exactly at the center, you will feel, I am hunger. If you become alert, hunger is thrown away. Hunger is there, you are here. Hunger is an object, you are a witness. Fasting has been used only because of this, for this technique. Fasting in itself of no use. If you are not doing this technique with hunger, fasting is foolish. Just foolish. Of no use. Mahavir used fasting with this technique, and Jains have been using simply fasting without this technique. Then it is foolish. You are just destructive. And it cannot be of any help. You can be hungry for months and identified with hunger that I am hungry. Useless. Harmful. There is no need to go on a fast. Every day you can feel it, but there are problems. That's why a fast may be helpful. Ordinarily, we stuff ourselves by food before we feel hunger. In the modern world, there is no need to feel hunger. You have a time fixed for your meals you take. You never ask whether the body is feeling hungry or not. Fixed hours and you take your meal. Hunger is not felt. You may say that no, when it is 1 o'clock, I feel hungry. That may be a false hunger. You feel because it is 1 o'clock, your time. Someday you can play a trick. Tell to your wife or your husband to change the clock, and it is 12 and the clock shows it is 1. You will feel hunger. Or it is already 1 hour past, it is 2 exactly, and the clock shows 1, then you feel hunger. You look at the clock and you feel hunger. This is artificial, false. It is not real. So, fasting may be helpful. If you fast, then for 2 or 3 days, you will feel false hunger. Only after the 3rd or 4th day, real hunger will be felt. Your body will demand, not the mind. When mind demands, it is false. When the body demands, it is real. And when it is real, and you become alert, you become totally different from your body. Hunger is a body phenomenon. Once you can feel that hunger is different from you, and you are a witness to it, you have transcended the body. But you can use anything. These are just examples. This technique can be used in many ways. You can devise your own way. But insist on one thing. If you are trying it with hunger, then go on trying at least for 3 months with hunger. Then only someday you will be disidentified with your body. Don't change it every day, because a deepening is needed in any technique. So for 3 months, choose anything. Stick to it. Apply the technique. And go on working with it. And always remember, in the beginning, in the middle, it will be very difficult. Because once the identity is felt that you are hungry, you cannot change it. You can just change mentally. You can say, no, I am not hunger, I am a witness. That is false. This is mind telling. This is not a feeling experience. Just try in the beginning, and remember, you are not to say that I am not hunger. This is how mind can deceive. You can say, The hunger is there. You can say, I am not hunger, I am not body, I am Brahma. You are not to say anything, because whatsoever you say will be false, because you are false. This chanting will not help that I am not body. You go on saying I am not body because you know that you are body. If you really know you are not the body, what is the use of saying it? I am not the body. No use. It will look stupid. Be aware, and then this feeling will be there. I am not body. This will not be a thought. This will be a feeling. This will not be felt in the head. This will be felt all over your being. You will feel the distance, that the body is far away. I am absolutely different. And there is no possibility even of mixing both. They cannot. Because body is matter and you are consciousness. They can live together, but they never mix. They cannot get mixed. Second technique. The purity of other teachings is an impurity to us. In reality, know nothing as pure or impure. This is one of the basic tantra methods, very difficult to conceive, because absolutely non-ethical, non-moral. I will not say immoral, because tantra is not concerned with morality or immorality. Tantra says it is irrelevant. This method is to help you grow beyond purity and impurity, beyond division, really, dichotomy, duality. Tantra says existence is non-dual. It is one. And all distinctions are man-created. All distinctions, remember. Distinctions as such are man-created. Good, bad, pure, impure, moral, immoral, virtue, sin, all concepts are man-created. They are attitudes of man. They are not real. What is impure? And what is pure? It depends on your interpretation. What is immoral and what is moral? It depends on your interpretation. Nietzsche has said somewhere that all morality is interpretation. So something can be moral in this country and immoral in the neighboring country. Something can be moral to a mountain and immoral to a Hindu. Moral to a Christian and immoral to a Jain. Or even something can be moral to the older generation and immoral to the new generation. It depends. It is an attitude. Basically, it is a fiction. The fact is simply the fact. The naked fact is simply the fact. It is neither moral nor immoral, nor pure nor impure. Think of the earth without human beings. Then what will be pure and what will be impure? Everything will be, simply be. Nothing will be pure and nothing will be impure. Nothing will be good and nothing will be bad. With man, mind comes in. Mind divides. He says this is good and that is bad. This division not only creates a division in the world, this division creates a division in the divider also. If you divide, you are also divided in that division. And you cannot transcend your inner division unless you forget outer divisions. Whatsoever you do to the world, you have done to yourself also. Naropa says, one of the greatest masters of Siddha Yoga, he says, an inch's division and hell and heaven are set apart. An inch's division and heaven and hell are set apart. And we go on dividing. We go on labeling, condemning, justifying. Look at the bare fact of existence and don't label it. Only then Tantra teaching can be understood. Don't say good or bad. Don't bring your mind to the fact. The moment you bring your mind to the fact, you have created a fiction. Now it is not a fact. It is not a reality. It is your projection. This sutra says, the purity of other teachings is an impurity to us. In reality, know nothing as pure or impure. The purity of other teachings is an impurity to us. Tantra says, for other teachings, what is very pure, a virtue, is a sin for us. Because their concept of purity divides, then something becomes impure. If you call a man saint, you have created the sinner. Somewhere you will have now to condemn someone. Because the saint cannot exist without the sinner. And look now at the absurdity of our efforts. And we go on trying to destroy sinners. We conceive and hope a world where there will be no sinners, only saints. This is nonsense. Because saints cannot exist without sinners. They are the other aspect of the same coin. You cannot destroy one aspect of the coin. The both will exist. Sinners and saints both are part and parcel of one thing. If you destroy the sinners, saints will disappear from the world. But don't be afraid. Let them disappear. Because they have not proved of any worth. Sinners and saints are both parts of one interpretation, of one attitude to look at the world, to say this is good and this is bad. And you cannot say this is good unless you say that that is bad. The bad is needed to define the good. So the good depends on the bad, and your virtue depends on sin. And your sins are impossible. They cannot exist without the sinners. So they must be grateful to the sinners. They exist because of them, in relation to them, in comparison to them. Howsoever they condemn the sinners, they are part and parcel of the same phenomenon. Sinners can disappear from the world only when saints disappear. not before that. And sin will not be there when there is no concept of virtue. Tantra says the fact is real, the interpretation is unreal. Don't interpret. In reality, know nothing as pure or impure. Why? Because purity and impurity are our attitudes imposed on reality. Try this. This technique is arduous, not simple. Because we are so much oriented with dual thinking, based, rooted in dual thinking, that we are not even aware of our condemnations and justifications. If someone starts smoking here, you may not have consciously felt anything, but you have condemned. Deep down within you, you have condemned. Your look may have condemned, or no look may have condemned. You may not look at the person, and you have condemned. This is going to be difficult, because the habit has become so deep-rooted. You go on, just by your gestures, your sitting, your standing, you go on condemning, justifying. Not even aware that what you are doing. When you smile at a person, when you don't smile at a person, when you look at someone, when you don't look, just ignore someone, what you are doing? You are imposing your attitudes. You say something is beautiful, then you will have to condemn something as ugly. And this dual attitude is dividing you simultaneously. So within you will be two persons. Because if you say someone is angry and anger is bad, what you will do when you will feel angry? You will say this is bad. Then there will be problems, because you say this is bad, this anger is bad in me. Then you have started to divide yourself into two persons, a bad person, an evil person within, and a good person, a saint. Of course, you are bound to be identified with the saint within. So the devil, the Satan, the evil is to be condemned within you. You are divided in two. Now there will be a constant fight, conflict. Now you cannot be an individual. You will be a crowd. A house divided against itself. Now there will be no peace, no silence. You can feel only tensions and anguish. That's what you are feeling, but you don't know why. A divided person cannot be at peace. How he can be? Where to put your devil? You have to destroy it. And that is you. And you cannot destroy it. You are not two. The reality is one. But because of your divisive attitude, you have divided the outer reality. Now the inner is also divided accordingly. So everyone is fighting with himself. As if you are fighting with one hand, right hand, with the left hand. And the energy is one. In my right hand and left hand, I am flowing in both. But I can oppose each other, my right and left hands, and I can create a conflict if bogus fight also. And sometimes I can deceive myself that the right hand has won and now the left is down. But this is a deception, because I know it is me in the both, and any moment I can put the left up and the right down. It is I am both. Both the hands are mine. So howsoever you think you have put your saint above and the devil is crushed down, you know that any moment you can change the positions and the saint will be down and the devil will be on it. That creates fear, insecurity, because you know nothing is certain. You know you are so loving this moment, and you have crushed your hatred down, but you are afraid, because any moment the hatred can come up and the love will be just crushed down. And it can happen any moment, because you are within both. Tantra says, don't divide, be undivided. Only then you will be victorious. But how to be undivided? Don't condemn. Don't say this is good and that is bad. Just withdraw all conceptions of purity and impurity. Look at the world, but don't say what it is. Be ignorant. Don't be too much wise. Don't label. Remain silent, non-condemnatory, non-justifying. If you can remain silent about the world, by and by this silence will penetrate within, and if the division is not there outwardly, the division will disappear from inward consciousness. Because they can adjust both together. But this is dangerous for society. That's why Tantra was suppressed. This is dangerous. Nothing is immoral, nothing is moral. Nothing is pure, nothing is impure. Things are as they are. So a real tantric will not say a thief is bad. He will not say. He will say he is a thief, that's all. And even by using the word thief, there is no condemnation in his mind. This thief is just a fact, not a condemnation. If someone says that here is a man, a great saint, so he will say, okay, he is a saint, but there is no evaluation in it. He will not say he is good. He will say, okay, he is a saint and that man is a thief. Just like this is a rose flower and that is not a rose flower. This tree is high and this tree is low. Night is dark and day is light. But no comparison and no. But this is dangerous. Society cannot exist without condemning some and without appreciating the other. Society cannot exist. Society exists on duality. That's why Tantra was suppressed. It was thought to be antisocial. It is not. It is not. But the very attitude of non-duality is transcendental. It is not anti-society, it is transcendental. It is beyond society. Try this. Just move in the world without any values. Just just natural facts. Someone is this and someone is that. And then by and by you will feel a non-division within yourself. Your polarities will be coming together. Your bad and your good will be coming together. They will merge into one and you will become one unity. Nothing as pure, nothing as impure, no, in reality. The purity of other teachings is an impurity to us. Tantra says, for others what is basic is poisonous for us. For example, there are teachings which are based on non-violence. They say violence is bad, non-violence is good. Tantra says non-violence is non-violence, violence is violence. Nothing is good and nothing is bad. There are teachings which are based on celibacy, brahmacharya. They say brahmacharya is good, sex is bad. Tantra says sex is sex, brahmacharya is brahmacharya. And one is a brahmacharya and one is not. But these are simple facts. No values attached to them. And Tantra will never say that brahmachari is good. The celibate is good. And one who is in sex is bad. Tantra will not say. Tantra accepts things as they are. And why? Just to create a unity within you. This is a technique to create a unity within you. To have a total existence within, undivided, non-conflicting, not opposed. Only then silence is possible. One who is trying to move to some place against something can never be at peace. How can he be? And one who is divided within himself and fighting with himself, how he can win? It is impossible. You are both, so who is going to win? No one is going to win, and you will be at loss because you will dissipate your energy in fighting unnecessarily. This is a technique to create a unity in yourself. Allow values to disappear. Don't judge. Jesus says somewhere, judge ye not, so that ye may not be judged. But this was impossible for the Jews to understand, because the whole Jew conception is moral oriented. This is good and that is not good. And Jesus, in his teaching, judge ye not, is talking in terms